not? Oh, it's not on. That's on. Okay. Omagyana Timaranda said Jinanina Salakaya Tikshivamilitan Dina Tasmai Shi Gudavaya Namaha. Shi Chitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yunibutari Swamukha Kadavayam Dadadi Swapadantikam. Vanchakalpaturibhischa Kripasindabhavicha Paditnam Pavnivu Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Shri Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Should I give a heavy class about Grihastha life? One is always tempted. Everything depends on knowledge and attitude. Vijnana. Vijnana means realized knowledge. I remember speaking to one Hindu gentleman and I mentioned the word vijnana and he was complaining and he tapped some wood and he said, no, vijnana means practical knowledge. He said, no, it means practical knowledge. Yes, it means practical knowledge. Because spiritual life is also practical. Perhaps he was giving away a certain mentality in thinking that actually spiritual life is some kind of abstract thought. It's not real. But here it's suggested it is real. It's interesting how it says here, lived at home for thousands of years and developed perfect knowledge and spiritual consciousness. So even though Grihastha life, in one sense, or let's say householder life, is being condemned under kupan, it means a blind or a blind well, I think. I think in India you have that problem. Is that right? But where you walk, you sometimes come across wells. I've heard so. I haven't seen it much myself, but you go on. I've heard that if you go on the Brajamandala Parikram, one's got to be very careful, as it's very dark, and maybe there aren't any street lights, and maybe your torch batteries have gone dead, and you can't buy any new ones. You could fall down a well. Is that right? Yeah. So, and actually, that happens sometimes. A person falls down a well. They scream, they shout if they can, but there's no one around to hear them. Very perilous situation. It's compared to that, and sometimes we condemn householder life in such a way, and we can become very enthusiastic about decrying householder life. But here it's mentioned that actually the Prachetas developed spiritual consciousness while situated in Grihastha life. So one should actually have some Vijnan, which means some proper understanding of this very important concept, Vijnan. That idea of realization. In most education, we hear about knowledge and understanding. Those of us who have some knowledge of education or teaching will know there's knowledge and understanding. But there's also some talk of skills, or what the Americans call competences. The word competences. And occasionally we hear something about values. But usually they're not very often seen as the goal, these days not seen as the goal of education. But here a kind of another dimension is being added, and that is realization. Very important concept, the idea of realization. And that idea of realization being extended to the spiritual. That is quite an unusual concept for those of us who are in the West. The West is very much influenced by some of the Western philosophers, such as particularly Kant. And Kant, Immanuel Kant, quite an interesting character. He was German. He lived in the town of Königsberg, I think. Was it Königsberg? Königsberg. He was extremely regulated in his activities. I mean, we hear that punctuality and deity worship is one of the standards. And it should be right on time, punctuality. But he was so punctual that the people used to set their clocks and watches by Immanuel Kant walking by. Here he comes. Oh, it must be 4:32. Let me correct my watch. Interesting character. But he actually talked about the limits of knowledge. And he recognized that our knowledge is limited by our sensory apparatus, our bodily apparatus. He recognized that the Isha Upanishad, it says the same thing. Limited senses, imperfect senses. He recognized that. So he said there's a limit to our knowledge. It can only go so far. And beyond that is the noumenal. I think that's a Greek word, am I right? Or it comes from the Greek, phenomenal, noumenal. There's two things, noumenal, which I think refers to the spiritual, and phenomenal, which refers to things of this word. Therefore we use the word phenomenon, a phenomenon, or several phenomena, which means things that happen, things that are transient. So he actually differentiated between spirit and matter. However, he said, there is a limit to our knowledge, beyond which we can only know through faith. So there's a boundary to knowledge. However, our tradition is a little different. Chaitanya Tagore, are you chanting your rounds or listening to class? I'm asking a question. Are you listening to class or are you chanting your rounds? Okay. So take your hand out of your bead bag and listen to class. Thank you. So he pointed to this separation between the spiritual and the material. The Vedic approach is somewhat different. The Vedic approach is that actually our perception can be extended to the spiritual from the material. In other words, that boundary of perception can be extended by certain practices, yogic practices. Quite a different concept. In other words, we can actually directly perceive spirit in a similar way that we can perceive matter. Therefore, that concept is there of realization. Of course, that idea of realization can also be there in the spiritual, in the material world, and in material education. One can have some insight into something. But particularly important here is that idea of realization. And there is a connection, as kind of alluded to here, that one's attitude and values, and particularly one's ability to control the senses, are integral to the process of knowledge. That is not very popular in the outside world or in educational circles, where knowledge is seen as largely seen, although many teachers kind of contest this in various ways, that knowledge is a commodity. In education, we often talk about three phases: planning, delivery, and evaluation or assessment. Delivery. What does that word, what's that word normally associated with delivery? Of course, it can be giving birth. You deliver a child. But what's another kind of context in which delivery is used? Post, yes. Yeah, thank you. Is it, which delivery? Yeah, the Tesco shop. You know, Tesco's is like the Carrefour or the GB you have here. In the UK, we have Tesco's. They have a motto on the side of their vans: "You shop, we drop." Anyway, I won't get into that because they drop off. There's also a kind of a saying: "Shop till you drop." Because people these days are very much addicted to shopping. Consumerism. It's, what do they call it? Retail therapy? Retail therapy. Shop till you drop. Some people go on the internet till they drop. 2 days ago, there was a story in the newspaper about a gentleman, 30 years old in China, had been gaming for 3 days in an internet cafe and hadn't slept and hardly eaten, and he dropped dead. And that's the second incident recently. Just shortly before that, it happened in China also. A gentleman, 28 years old, did exactly the same. But anyway, shop till we drop. Delivery. So we deliver. We have the grocery. Groceries delivered. Yeah. It's a commodity. And there's a transaction there. We pay for our Tesco's. It may tell us how much we've saved, but actually we're spending at the end of the day. So there is an exchange. Knowledge is seen as a commodity. Not only is it something that you can buy in a university, but if you buy a sufficient amount of it, either at university or by reading books, you can go on a game show, How to Become a Millionaire. What's it called? Do you have it here? Who wants to be a millionaire? Hands up. Who wants to be a millionaire? Okay, I'll put my hand up. I'd like to be one. Are you being honest here? We could spend it on Krishna. Who wants to be... Okay. Who wants to be... Yes, we can win. In other words, knowledge is a commodity with which we actually get some sense gratification, some power or something. The concept of knowledge is somewhat different. We have this idea of realization, not only some perception, some memory, or some understanding, some grasp, but actually where it really becomes absolute realization, where we see things as they are. That requires sense control. And therefore it's mentioned here that in education, in the brahmachari stage of life, there must be sense control. Regrettably, most children are trained in some form of sexual indulgence, or at least some appreciation of that, at a very young age. They're talking, what do they talk, what's the name for it? The sexualization of children is a big issue these days. How adulthood is beginning much earlier, some people claim. They don't really have time for that innocent childhood. And they learn about sex very, very, at a very young age. Not healthy, because even though sex life may be regulated and so on, if one actually gets those impressions within the mind and heart at a very young age, it is very difficult to give up that, we could say addiction, really. Because all of the material world means we're compelled to satisfy the senses. Compelled, they push us. Therefore, it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that even a man of who's trying to control the senses, or a person of discrimination who's trying to control the senses, will sometimes lose control of the senses. And they will force us to act. Therefore, generally speaking, there should be regulation. It's just like we all have to eat. But it is far more dignified if we eat at a regular time. It's prepared. We have breakfast, we have lunch. In every civilized society, there's some degree of regular. That's going, of course, in modern society. We have what we call grazing. Grazing is what cows and horses do. And it's quite an apt metaphor, grazing, because it suggests animal. You look at the cows that are always eating. Sometimes wonder, don't they get tired of grass? Of course, they probably look for where the grass is greener, but they're eating all the time. So human beings also becoming unregulated. The point is that actually one should regulate the senses. Otherwise, the danger is that the senses can carry one away. Adanta gobir vishatam tamishram. They take us to hell. And even if one may or may not believe in hell next life, but even in this life, we can see that if we let the senses go, there is danger. We were talking the other day with some devotees about drugs and how they... today they're considered a part of life. I think in my own youth there was a song, Feed Your Head was one of the lines. Feed Your Head. So just like we need food for the body, the idea is we also need food for the mind. And that food for the mind is drugs. But regrettably, if one takes particularly the hard drugs, one can actually become degraded extremely quickly. Degraded means it's very difficult to get out of that. Even though we actually experience, particularly as devotees, that we are sometimes fighting the senses. Mm-hmm. That's a fact, and we experience it. Until one tries to control the senses, one may think everything's fine. One may ride on the chariot of the mind and be galloping along at a high speed and thinking, this is fun. Mm-hmm. But of course, as soon as one perhaps understands the need to restrain the senses, then there's problems. We see how and even non-devotees will experience, they want to stop smoking, they want to lose weight, particularly with ladies these days. There's a huge pressure to look very nice and to be slim. What do they have, size zero, is it now? Size zero, yeah. Do they have minuses now? Oh, in some countries it's not allowed. They're getting a little sensible. You have minus sizes. It is dangerous to actually. We shouldn't necessarily condemn all forms of sense gratification. Sense gratification is necessary. It has some benefits. But one should also not glorify it as thinking this is the real goal in life. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it can carry us away. Again, in the news, a lady had some injections to improve her posterior. Generally, a woman is attractive, a man is attracted by the breasts and the back side of a lady. They're the parts that are important. So a lady died by having some injections. And also, there was a famous film star, I think, in Germany, died also from having an operation to increase the size of her breast. So, I mean, there is just so much absorption with the body and trying to get pleasure out of the body, but there is danger, and that has to be recognized. And therefore, there is a regulated system for actually changing this lust, this desire to satisfy the senses, transforming it into love. And that is the process. And it really begins with this brahmachari life, where one is trained in the beginning to live a simple life, to value that, to have an experience of pleasure in student life. So that when one enters grihastha life, one can actually still maintain some control some understanding of spiritual life. And even mentioned here, one actually can develop God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, while in the Grihastha Ashram. And at least for some men, the idea is that one actually then leaves home at the end. Mm-hmm. So one needs to understand this carefully. It's not that Grihastha life is condemned, even though Grihastha life may also be given up at the end. But one needs to carefully differentiate between Grihastha life and Griha Medhi life. What does Medhi mean? I think Srila Prabhupada translates it anyway. Griha Medhi is envious. Grihast householders, right? They're just like Duryodhan. He was very, once the Pandavas had been sent to, they were given half of the kingdom at one stage in the story of the Mahabharata. They were given the worst half of the kingdom, very barren. But by Krishna's mercy, Indraprastha, it became extremely wealthy. And Maharaj Yudhisthira performed a Rajasuya sacrifice. And shortly afterwards, in the court, Duryodhan was despondent. And his father asked him, "What's the problem? You've got so much wealth." He said, "Maharaj Yudhisthira's got more than me." I've seen it, and he describes the heaps of jewels and how there were Snataka Brahmins, and each of them was given 30 maidservants. I mean, just incomparable wealth. And he was seething with envy. So there's no end to it. There's no end to it. Therefore, it's mentioned here, even if you haven't finished all your duties, if the time is right, leave home. Because there's always something to be done. There's some adjustment to be made. If you think about the place you live right now, is there something to be done? Is the tap leaking? Could the wall need a new coat of paint? What's wrong? Something. If you told me it's all right, I'm not sure if I believe you. Something needs to be adjusted. But it mentions it's so important that you get out. And the point is that by adjusting, one does not become ultimately happy. In fact, it's mentioned here, the home life without Krishna consciousness can become hellish. Can really become despicable. So this is the idea. And particularly important is the idea that we actually this consciousness is developed in the beginning of life through education. Actually, these ashrams are very natural. Even in regular societies, most societies, they have an idea of education, family life, retirement. And many societies have the idea of some men will leave home to become monks or whatever. By the way, we shouldn't call our brahmacharis monks. People become surprised when our monks get married. Sannyasis we can call them. I know there was in the UK they were having Meet the Monks program. They were all brahmacharis, but people sometimes become a little disappointed when our monks finally get married. Brahmacharis can get married, no problem. It's a natural system, but there must be that development of Krishna consciousness, and there must be that education, and there must be that those values. Without values and without sense control, there cannot be real knowledge or any valuable knowledge. And we see today, what do they call it? Market-led education. It's basically done for money. And actually, people describe universities as businesses. They describe them. They don't just say, we need money to support because we've got education. They could say that. And we do. We've got Bhaktivedanta College. We need money. We need Lakshmi. But the point is, it's not a business. It is actually for imparting knowledge. It may be actually that we're giving some livelihood skills for livelihood. That's necessary. Prabhupada mentions it is necessary for that, because one wants to live, one needs to live, and therefore as Grihasthas we also have to make money fairly, ethically. That may be there, but the main thing is the development of character and the development of consciousness. Therefore a kind of consciousness based education is what is needed. Very, very important. Questions, comments? Come. What can be considered practical knowledge? Yes. Yeah. You're right. It is, and spiritually it's practical as well. It's not that spiritual life is just a dream. It's practical. It becomes? Yes. We do have the stage of faith, you're right, Shraddha. And Shraddha carries on being important because those stages of spiritual life are nested. One always still needs to have that. It's not that one completely abandons faith. But the point is to describe, in rather Kantian terms, religion as faith and science as knowledge is problematic. Because actually, once you've got knowledge, where's the question of faith? It may carry on, because in this world things are uncertain. So we don't know everything. We're not the Paramatma. But the point is, one has got to have some direct perception. Prachikshamam gumam damyam. One has to understand, I'm not this body. Actually, realize that. Some insight has to be there. And actually, most devotees are pretty good at that. If we have to talk about how we're not the body, most devotees can actually talk in their own words rather than just quoting chapter and verse. We have to have some perception of how we're not this body first, before we move to God, generally speaking. It's all about experience. Knowledge is about experience. Knowledge isn't something that exists separate from experience. And many philosophers have debated this point. Yes. It's always based on some belief, even scientific knowledge, basically. We have faith in the scientists. I mean, who has actually seen Darwinian evolution? Anyone? Has anyone seen monkeys turning into men? Of course, it's difficult. I mean, because it would take time. It would need a kind of long study at university, probably lasting several generations. But still, the point, and even there, there is, what do the philosophers of science call it, the unobservables, I think that's the word they have for it. They're the things that actually we kind of perceive by extending the senses, but we don't actually see them. So there is a whole narrative in Darwin in evolution. There's a whole narrative. Just like we have our narratives, our stories of creation, our creation stories, and they inform our worldview and our values and our responses to the world. They have their narrative. And that informs our worldview. Pretty well every moral issue these days is discussed in terms of Darwinian theory. Why are we like this? Because our ancestors. You listen to any moral debates on this. The reference is always, that's the kind of basic framework by which we operate, by which we make our moral choices. So yes, there is a kind of narrative. So there is, as you're saying there, Kamalavati, there is some degree of faith, always. The question is, in whom do we have faith? That's the real question. And therefore one needs to be intelligent in deciding in whom do I have faith? In whom do I place it? Even as devotees, we have to be selective about who we have faith. It's not that we're going to have faith in everyone equally. We need to actually find someone in whom we can place that trust, because we cannot see the truth at the moment. However, that does not mean that we cannot in time perceive the truth. And therefore, religion is not a question of keeping people in the dark. It may be that when we're young, that actually there needs to be some inquiry, some service, practical service, and some humility. Because without those, you cannot get knowledge. But it doesn't mean that those who are teachers or leaders have to keep people in the dark. That questioning is bad. And it happens. There are some religions or people within, or strands within those traditions, individuals, there are maybe some in our own traditions, who would rather that we didn't ask questions. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. The self-realized soul can see the truth, he's seen it, but he must be approached with inquiry. That means we've got to ask. It can't be blind knowledge. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, I've got a quote, I don't have it with me. He actually says, blind faith is useless. Doesn't make any... clearly. You must have... in other words, it has to be put in the right person. That faith has to then become realization, eventually. So we see the truth. That increases our faith. So actually our Krishna consciousness isn't a faith or a belief system. Rather, it's a system of knowledge. And that's where it's somewhat differentiated from this Kantian idea of where knowledge and faith have quite separate domains. Possibly complementary, some people say. But still, actually, they're not that different within our tradition. And actually, by inquiring and thrashing out these questions and saying, I've got these doubts and I'm going to express them, our knowledge is enhanced. But if we don't thrash out the doubts, they can eat us up. There is a story, I think, in one of the Puranas about someone who was trying to hide a fox. Does anyone know the story? Who was he? Was he just a person, a man? Yeah. No, that's okay. That's... You understood that? I'll just repeat it. A gentleman was hunting for foxes illegally, and the king came by, and he shouldn't have been hunting, so he hid the fox under his coat. And the king asked him, how are you? Had a conversation. He said, I'm fine. But as soon as the king left, he dropped down dead, because dropped in half, because the fox had been eating him from within. Nice story, huh? Graphic. Kamalavati, the purport of that story? Yeah, how do you understand it? They eat you up. Actually, we say that sometimes, don't we? I've got doubts and they're eating into me. Sometimes we use that. So it's quite an appropriate metaphor in a sense, a kind of natural metaphor. They're eating in. Therefore, these doubts should be expressed. Sometimes we don't express doubts because we don't want to get rid of our ignorance. And it's also we don't to express our ignorance, to say to people, I don't know. So sometimes, even when we're preaching, it is often more... it shows more integrity to say when we're asked a question, I don't know. I'll do some research and get back to you on it. See if I'm... Well, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with not being all-knowing. We're not God. Krishna is all-knowing. Of course, we should have some knowledge, that's true. But, you know, if we don't, then we should admit we don't know, and then we can also find it, because we're learners. We're not teachers, we're all students, we're all disciples, not gurus. This is the process of knowledge. Actually, it's a very exciting process of knowledge, really. It's dynamic. Knowledge isn't a commodity, static, dead. Knowledge is an exciting process. We should embrace it enthusiastically. Yes, we'll finish at 1:45.
So my question is,
Yeah, obviously one needs to be careful about misinterpreting this idea that they left home even though they hadn't completed everything. Prabhupada said when the time is ripe. So, I mean, the point is here, if the time's right, and not every little detail is sorted out, the husband could leave. It doesn't mean that the husband should think, I haven't got my sons and daughters married, I haven't left enough to look after my wife, or simply, I don't like marriage anymore. That's not what sannyasa means. And actually not everyone, not all men would take sannyasa, and it's not absolutely necessary in this age. The main thing is we're Krishna conscious, and we need to apply that principle. If the Grihastha ashram is really becoming an impediment, then may give it up. But if the Grihastha ashram is good, and one is in good consciousness, what's the problem? The principles must be applied. That's what Vedic means. Vedic doesn't mean India. India? It's a mess. India's a mess. Why are we proud of India? Excuse me. Vedic doesn't mean India. Of course, the Vedic civilization has some connection with India, and we could discuss that. Exactly what that connection is. But actually Vedic, and we have to understand the principles here. Otherwise, if we try and apply these things too rigidly, it becomes a mess. And therefore, you know, we do sometimes have men leaving their wives because they've failed and they want to get out of it. That's not our business. Quickly, and I'm going to answer very quickly. I'm going to give you a quick answer.
How do we understand that something is realization or emotionally inspired thought? For example, I realized something some time ago, and then 2 years later I realized I was wrong.
Then your realization wasn't perfect, and also a certain amount of skepticism is good. But also, you know, once you actually realize something, you know it. No one has to tell you. Just like if you eat, you know, you're hungry, and then you eat 3 rasgullas and a piece of sabji and 2 puris, you know, and I come to say, you know, Krishna Das, you say now you're satisfied, you're no longer hungry. I mean, are you sure? Can you prove it to me? Prove it. We can do a kind of whole test. We can go and do some kind of thesis on testing people, see whether they're really not hungry. You know. That's conviction. There's got to be that pratishtha. There's got to be that realized knowledge. There has to be that conviction, that certainty. But a certain skepticism is not unhealthy at the beginning. Yeah, you can always check, and it's good to always check with guru, sadhu, elders, is what I'm feeling is. Sometimes one devotee mentioned to me how he felt some kind of emotion in front of the deity. So he was asking me, is this real or is it not real? And sometimes it may be mixed, a shadow attachment or whatever. So we can ask. There should always be something. But also we need to learn to trust our intuition and our perception, because our perception is sometimes right. Otherwise, how? Yeah. Unless our perception is becoming purified, unless our senses are becoming purified, our mind is becoming purified, our intelligence is purified, what use is it? We must actually start to see things as they are. Shastra Chakshus doesn't mean you just kind of can relate this situation to verses, you know. Here's a pretty girl, Dehino Sminyata Dehe. She'll be horrible when she grows up. I mean, that's what, you know, I mean, those are some of my thoughts as a brahmachari, giving myself away. But that's not the, ultimately one sees beyond the body, pandita samadarshan. You know, actually my opinion is Krishna's opinion, in a sense. But it's got to be mine. It's personal. It's not just something that exists in a book. It's got to become part of ourselves. So we become real. And gradually it's got to become part of us, assimilated. Yeah. But a bit of skepticism is all right. Yeah. My perception is this. But we have to engage with our perception. Not simply my perception is right, and on the other hand, not simply my perception is always wrong. My senses are bad, my mind is bad, and therefore I'm not going to engage with them. We have to engage with them. One question I'll answer you very quickly, Jaini Tagore. It isn't a question of happiness, although it is a question of happiness, but it's not a question from our own individual point of view of a profit calculation. Will I be more happy? Let me think. I'm struggling now, having a bit of a problem with sex desire. However, if I get married, I've got to actually deal with a woman's mind. I've got to make money. This is some of the things men speak about, by the way. You should know some of the inside secrets. Basically, my question is, what is my dharma? That's all. What's my duty? And look at myself. What is my nature? And if you're not a brahmachari, and it is laudable to be a brahmachari, and if one can do it, one should do it. Fine. But if you're not there, then fine, you just get married. That's detachment. That is detachment. Not that I become attached to being detached or being, whatever. We have to. My own experience, just briefly, is actually that I feel a lot more happy since I got married than when I was a brahmachari, generally speaking. That may not apply to everyone else. It depends who you are. But we sometimes don't know what the future is. Therefore, we need elders to guide us. We do. It's very important to have elders. Experience, and who care for us, and it's important that if we need to be married, we should be married. I remember Mahavishnu Swami, the old Mahavishnu passed away a couple of years ago. Very often he was asking people, "How are you? Are you married yet?" He was concerned. Why? Because generally speaking, if you're not situated it well according to Grihastha Ashram, it's very hard to advance in spiritual life. In fact, there's one place that says if you're not, it's impossible. But, one can, of course, make some advance. But generally speaking, one needs to be in an ashram rather than floating, generally speaking. Yeah. That's the idea. Why? Because dharma. You have to have some responsibility somewhere, you see. Some austerity. So there's austerity mentioned here in brahmachari life. There's austerity in grihastha life. There's austerity in vanaprastha. There's austerity. And there's duties there. So basically, it's done on the basis of what is the right thing to do, what is my dharma, what are my tendencies, because they can't be given up. Svakarma jam. We have that svakarma. Very difficult to change it. But we can become Krishna conscious by acting according to that. It says in the middle of the 18th chapter of the Gita. You're looking a little perplexed there. You've got a quick question. We'll discuss. Yeah. There was a perplexed look went across your forehead. Slight perplexity. Let's take prasadam. We can discuss later. Srila Prabhupada, Kitha.